Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as always, I'm joined by Paul Velasco and Ben Stevens to discuss the fallout from what was just an exhilarating race in Turkey, and something that it seems there are so many different storylines to come out of it that we need a few days to get our head fully around everything that happened. Ben, I'll start with you. Now you've had a few days to reflect. Are you still as kind of high on what a race this was as you were a few days ago?
Yeah, to be honest, I am. As much as maybe the cause of, you know, the race with, you know, the service and stuff isn't maybe the way you want sort of these things to happen, but, you know, the outcome and, you know, how the race played out was thoroughly enjoyable. And yeah, I'm still feeling that high a few days later.
Yeah, I've got that feeling kind of when your football team wins and you just want to absorb every single bit of positive content there is on the internet for the next few days. I'm kind of like that with this race, you know, just wanting to read everything and discuss all of it. Paul, I guess it's an interesting one because of, you know, we had, as Ben mentioned and as some of the drivers have mentioned, you know, these aren't necessarily the conditions which we'd ideally like to see F1 in, but it did make for a great spectacle.
I regret that Ben wasn't on the podcast on Sunday after the race. But Ben, I'd have to ask you one question because I know you went to bed before qualifying was finalized. So I got this question. You've got to be honest with me, bud, because you know I'm president and only member of the Lance Stroll Formula One fan club, as you well know. When you saw Stroll on pole, what was your first thought? Honestly, be honest with me.
My first thought, so just to sort of run through how I found out. So I sort of woke up Sunday morning, and thankfully we get the replays here. So I watched the whole session in full. So sort of, you know, was treating it in real time, but like even seeing it sort of transpire the way it was, like there's a large part of me being a part of the anti-Lance Stroll fan club, which has millions of members, as I am. I was like, something's weird here. Like this doesn't make any sense at all. Like Lance Stroll is the guy on pole. Like what? I was confused more than anything. It was, it was gobsmacking. As much as now that I can say a few days later, he deserved it. And you know, he just drove very well in some very difficult conditions. Yeah, at the time I was beyond shocked.
Well, no, I needed to sort of just get that on the record. It was important.
Fair enough.
Paul, I wanted to get your take on that lap from Stroll. I think in the circumstances, it seemed like the tyre warm-up and just the kind of car characteristics had a huge amount to say about what kind of grip you were able to get. And obviously the Red Bull seemed to be dominant on the full wets, although actually the Racing Point looked dominant on the full wets in the race. And it was the ability for the Racing Point to run on the intermediates during qualifying that allowed Stroll to get out that lap. Having kind of watched it back, do you think he just deserves all the credit for what was his first pole position in Formula One and a completely unexpected one at that?
Well, indeed. I do believe that when everything aligns well for Lance, he's as good as it gets. Probably doesn't align often enough for him. But the reality is he's very good, and he's very good in races of attrition and conditions which are tricky. I think he did his shares the world of good. Now he's got to sustain it. In terms of what struck me about that session was that last year's Mercedes, which we know are the pink cars, were brilliant in those conditions, and this year's car just was nowhere. You know, it took a Lewis Hamilton sort of mega performance to actually extract anything out of the car, because they didn't even run it for the first 2 days. I think they did the least laps. So to me, that was very interesting that in 1 year they have a car that could work in the rain, as we saw the pink cars doing so amazing, and then the cars that cleaned up prior to that that to me was very interesting. But that Stroll did a good job, there's no taking away from that.
Yeah, I think that a part of the reason perhaps that Mercedes did struggle in those conditions is that it seemed that tyre warm-up was the real crucial aspect. And while they do have the DAS system, They have done a lot of work to ensure that they can just be softer on their tyres, to ensure that they have less degradation during the race. So I think it could have been a situation with that. But, you know, knowing how good Lewis Hamilton is in the wet and seeing him so far off the pace of Lance Stroll, you know, there had to be something strange going on with that Mercedes, because that's not usually what you'd expect to see. But Ben, just moving on to the race, obviously we see Stroll kind of go out in the lead and do a very good job. But I do think that when it came to the tyre management, you know, whether he had pitted or not, I feel like Perez was always going to get the better of him.
Yeah, it did seem that way, didn't it? I think Sergio was in 9/10 or something, I want to say. It was pretty close. He was in DRS range, I believe, just before Lance pitted. So clearly, he'd started losing a lot of performance compared to his teammate and compared to Lewis at that point in the race. As good a job as he did. And that's the thing, though, is that, you know, regardless of how you feel about him, he is a young driver, and tyre management is one of those skills that you might not necessarily have with you at this stage in your career, as Lance does. And that's something, you know, he has to work on. And so it's a good lesson for him to sort of see that. And I know that Racing Point's come out and said that, you know, there's been some front wing damage which has contributed to that, but I'm a bit skeptical of that, to be honest. But yeah, it did look for sure like he was going to be slipping back regardless of whether he pitted or not. And yeah, that's unfortunate for him, but I'm sure it's something he can learn from.
Now, me and my friend have this on-running joke that every time Lewis Hamilton doesn't perform to his usual standards, there's some sort of floor damage comment come out of Mercedes a few days later. And I think Australian Grand Prix last season, when for some reason he was just completely off the pace of Bottas, and suddenly everyone thought that we had this Bottas 2.0, which obviously, you know, two championships for Lewis later,
yep,
wasn't the case. But I think that potentially Stroll just didn't have what it takes to manage what are incredibly difficult conditions, and conditions that Sergio Perez especially is absolutely made for, because he can just go forever on those tyres. Paul, how impressed were you with Sergio Perez, and just kind of moving forward, what do you expect to happen with him? Because it's pretty inconceivable that he's not going to end up with a drive next season.
Yeah, well, on the day, for me, Formula One got a great sort of window of where it all stands. It was just one beautiful Sunday afternoon where we saw Lewis the King. Just no one, even myself, could have predicted a few laps into the race, or whenever that race was, until substantially deep into it, that Lewis was going to win this race. When it dawned on us, I think there was a collective jaw-dropping that this guy is just on another planet. Then you take that scenario and you sort of morph that into Bottas spinning. I think they lost count. I mean, they were laughing on television about how bad this guy was. And Bottas isn't that bad. But in those conditions, it just somehow the gods conspired to just show the gulf between the guys. And if you go 24 hours earlier, Lewis was nowhere in qualifying, but Valtteri was 0.7 of a second behind him. Okay, so Lewis just rose that whole weekend. So that's that, the Mercedes aside. Now we go to Sergio. Sergio, and I'm going to beg to differ in terms of drivers can learn the rain and learn to do the tyres. Sergio was on it in 2012. He did the most amazing tyre conservation thing we've ever seen in Formula One in Malaysia, if you recall, when it was him and Alonso. Anyway, I just remember that just catapulted him there. And he's always been that way. It wasn't just a flash in the pan that he's continuously delivering in cars that are under-delivering for him. So when you look at that podium, because you put Seb on there, you've got experience. You've got this biggest block of experience, and each of those drivers destroyed their young guns on that day. You know, Sergio destroyed Lance, and Lance is a good driver. Seb destroyed Charles. Under pressure, Charles made a mistake again. You know what I'm saying? So it proves something for experience, and that's something that I'm very much for youth. But it's turned me. It said like, hey, but there is something for experience. And you look at the team of the big teams with the least experienced guys, you have Albon and Max. Max, his own worst enemy. He should have won that race. He knows it. We know it. no matter the excuses. It was his to win. Alex, yeah, he could have been on the podium. He didn't. The least experienced guys faded. Now imagine if Sergio was in the Red Bull.
I think that the answer to your question about whether Sergio was in that Red Bull is that he probably would have won the race. I've been a quite big believer in the talent of Max Verstappen, and I think most people who have watched him drive a car are believers in his talent. But I do think that this perception that he's kind of stamped out all these mistakes from his game is a little bit like wide of the mark. He's definitely still making errors, especially when under pressure and the chance to win is really there. And I think that that's his kind of next step, because everyone thinks winning is easy when they're watching Hamilton do it, but that's because he's got a lot of experience and practice at it. He's won 94 Grand Prix. You know, he's won more Grand Prix this season than Bottas has in his entire career. But Ben, do you think that there's something to say here for just Max probably learning a little bit about what it takes to win Grand Prix on this consistent basis, and that when you have the best car, it's not always as easy as just driving and winning? You've got to make the right choices, you've got to think about your strategy, and you've got to be patient, and you can't just go for the move when it's not on.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually wrote in my article after the race, I gave Max my worst of the day award. I mean, Valtteri was the obvious choice there with, I think it was six spins, but I felt like Max's two were sort of, you know, much more his fault and much easier, more easily avoidable. And this is sort of one of those things with Max where it's both what makes him Max and what makes him a great driver, but it's also something that does cost him, is that this sort of impatience, to put it simply, where he sees an opportunity or half an opportunity, or as the case may be, a quarter of an opportunity. You keep going reducing the fraction, but he'll still go for it. And whereas he might have been better served waiting a few corners or waiting another lap or whatever. And I think that's what cost him on Sunday, is just that sort of impatience. You know, if he was in the fastest car at that point in the race. If he had been more patient, there's a very realistic chance that he's the one standing on the top step of the podium, not Lewis.
Yeah, and when you watch the incident with Perez, it just was incredibly avoidable. You know, he's coming onto a straight and a braking zone. All he needs to do is just hang back a little bit more, but he's getting up so close behind him that all the wash from his car, and then in terms of the water, and then also the aero wash. And it was one of the most epic spin/crashes I've seen in a while in Formula One. And the way he stops that going on the wall is pretty incredible. But I agree, it's and I said on Sunday that his driving reminded me a bit of kind of like early Lewis, and I think back to incidents at Monza and Singapore in 2010 where he just didn't quite have the patience, and that's something that he seems to have fully kind of eradicated from his driving, and it's something I hope Max will learn. But I know, Paul, you've got some kind of strong feelings on Max, and it's difficult to know when he's going to start learning that, because he has been in Formula One for a long time now.
Yeah, look, I love Max. I thank God for Max. And I think he's just overdriving. He's just guilty of overdriving. He really wants to do well. I think this weekend, if I've got to really analyze it, I think he psyched himself out by allowing second place on the grid when he thought pole was his to get to him. He took a shot at the team, which I thought was really unfair, considering that team delivers, and I've said this in the previous pod, that the team delivers world record tire changes week in, week out. So they messed it up in quali, but it wasn't a big deal. It was going to start in the rain. Second place on the grid was fine. But I think he was just too angry. He needs to manage that anger. He needs to just... He's too feisty at the wrong times. And I'm just saying, it's exuberance of youth. And it's the kind of thing I think we saw Charles do to a certain extent. I think he got too exuberant there. Overdid it. Overcooked it. And I think that's the experience side. And although Max is not really running out of excuses, in terms of Max, he's kind of running out of excuses when it comes to experience, because he's very experienced now as a Formula One driver, although he's very young. But I think now it's the head. He's got to get his head right. He's got to become calmer. He's got to somehow, and I don't know if he's going to do that. I'm just thinking Max's legacy is going to be either superhero or super zero.
The thing about the pole position, I just don't understand. It was Lance Stroll on pole. I don't see any reason why Max should have been thinking that that was a massive impediment to him winning the race. Just look at what Lewis does when Valtteri's on pole. What does he do? He hounds him for the first stint until he makes a mistake and goes past him.
And on the Perez move was out of sim racing. I mean, that was just not on. That corner is flat out in you know, because it's a sweeping right-hander, slightly uphill, that goes, like you said, to the braking. That's flat out in the dry. And it was flat out almost in the wet. So what was he thinking going around the outside of Perez was just absolutely bonkers.
It just wasn't a percentage move, and he had so much time to wait. And I don't understand it. But Ben, moving on to another former Red Bull driver, Sebastian Vettel. This was obviously by far his best performance of the season, coming third. And this was an excellent drive from him. You know, brilliant start. He kept Hamilton behind him for a really long period, and he then made his tyres work. And even when he was passed by his teammate Charles Leclerc, he didn't panic, and then he was there to capitalise when the mistake came. So I thought this was a really great drive from Seb, and, you know, probably just about in the nick of time, just when people were starting to write him off.
Yeah, I think the only person who will be more relieved by that performance than Seb is Otmar Szafnauer, because that sort of goes a long way to sort of assuaging some of the concerns that, you know, he completely lost it. I definitely wouldn't say it's vintage Vettel, but it's very good Vettel, and it shows that there's still some pace there. And the thing as well is that as much as that podium position was sort of, you know, gifted to him a little bit by his teammate, him out qualifying Leclerc on Saturday definitely wasn't. And yeah, maybe it's just a conditions thing, but you know, maybe next week it's not going to rain in Bahrain, that's for sure. Maybe it'll go back to being the way it was, but you know, it shows that at least when things fall his way, he can still deliver, and that should give him massive confidence boost.
I think that this result doesn't change anything in the sense that this car is massively poorly suited to Sebastian Vettel's driving style. And I don't think that changed over one weekend. I think, as you're right, it's a conditions thing. But what this shows is that when it's very difficult for other people, he's still got the talent to make it work for him and the kind of race strategy and race nous to pull off a good result. I think that, obviously, Charles Leclerc has a better handle on the way this Ferrari works. I don't think it's a situation where they're going to go from different parts. I think there'll be a small kind of slightly subconscious bias towards her in terms of feedback and working with him more closely and kind of asking his opinion. But I don't think they have necessarily different cars. I just think that this car is not in any way built to the sensibilities of Sebastian Vettel. I don't think that will be such a big problem when he moves to Racing Point. And I think this just showed that, you know, even in a car that's quite difficult, that doesn't suit him, and in very difficult conditions, he's still got it. Paul, were you impressed with Vettel this weekend?
Well, I was happy for him. I mean, I'm not impressed with Vettel for a long time now. I think he owes us some good results. He's a four-time world champion. We know what he's capable of. But I've given it quite a lot of thought before talking about it. But Seb's in a different place, you know. Also, you've got to remember, yes, the Ferrari is a horror. It's probably the worst car they've ever built at Maranello. But if you look at Charles, he's hungry. He's going for it. He's how Seb was 10 years ago. Trust me, you know, full of beans. You got Seb, you got four world championships, he's a comfortable guy, he's got this car. He asked himself a question: I can try and drive the pants off this car and hurt myself, or I'm just going to drive it as fast as I can. And he's got no, as a four-time world champion, he just doesn't have that carrot to deliver week in, week out, unless he's got a cool piece of kit. So I reckon if Aston Martin hadn't come around, he would have just had a sabbatical, or he might have even quit. But I think this result goes a long way to, I think, even himself. I mean, believe me, if we were doubting him, imagine himself. So I think this went a very long way for him to repair. And hopefully he can deliver another 3-4 great races before his career ends with Ferrari. Because Ferrari did let him down. As much as people might think he did. No, he didn't. They didn't give him the right car to take on Lewis. And yes, I'm very happy for the weekend, but we need Formula One needs Seb to be good, you know, Seb to be right up there. So I don't want to sort of say, yeah, this is it. Now he's changed. It's a process, and I think we'll see over the next few races how Seb evolves. But end of the day, I think as Ben said, relief at Racing Point come Aston Martin.
Yeah, I agree. And I think an interesting aspect of all of this is that I don't see how Sebastian Vettel coming up just short in 2017 and 18 in a similar machinery to Lewis Hamilton is some sort of massive failure. People are talking about Hamilton being one of the greatest drivers ever this week after he wins his title, but somehow Seb not being able to beat him is some sort of massive failure. And I just don't get that. I thought that in those years, Seb was very good. And, you know, there are these mistakes which kind of stay with him, but you know, that's kind of what happens when you're competing at the very top end for world titles against an incredibly good driver. So I never think that he let Ferrari down.
Best moment of this whole Grand Prix weekend for me, I don't know for anybody else, for me, was when Seb rushed out of the cockpit and went and told Lewis, "You're the greatest. You're the greatest dude ever, mate. Whatever. Boom, boom, boom." He clarified later in the press conference. But that moment where he ran up and he said to him, "Lewis, you're the greatest." He didn't explain, "You're the greatest, but Jackie's second." You know, he just said, "You're the greatest." Because in that moment, that to me is the greatest moment I've seen in decades in this sport. And there on the podium, you had 11 world championship titles. I get gooseflesh when I think about it. And the first guy to go and congratulate Lewis was Seb. Man, we've got two amazing sportsmen at the top of our sport. And all the guys, they're brilliant. But that's leading by example. You know, those are moments you'll cherish forever. And you'll remember that day I was sleeping or that day I was sitting in a cafe, because that was a very special moment for me.
No, I 100% agree. But I'll move on to a topic that I know Paul doesn't like talking about, and that's the battle for the third place in the Constructors' Championship. A great weekend in that sense for Racing Point, obviously with Perez on the podium, and McLaren actually salvaged something, but Renault obviously just picking up the one point. It's now kind of swung completely the other way towards Racing Point and McLaren, but I do think when it comes to Bahrain, I do think that's a track that will suit Renault because of their kind of low downforce concept. So I'm just wondering, kind of, Ben, what your reflections on that battle over this weekend?
Turkey, I think, really turned it on its head almost. I know Paul's probably going to come in and say, "Who cares?" And a lot of people listening are say, "Who cares?" And they're completely valid in saying that. Will and I, though, we do like the battle. And it's fascinating because, you know, I'm not sure the cars are on the same level.
But let's not use words like fascinating, please.
Hey.
Interesting.
I honestly do find it fascinating.
Okay,
because
cool. I'll leave it to it.
I'll explain why I find it fascinating. Okay. It's because for all four of these teams, including Ferrari now, who have now joined the fray, this is heading into the season before the season that is supposed to be the season, 2022, right? So if there's any time where you want to be on the come up, you know, where it actually matters to be coming third, it's now, because you want to be saying to everyone in your factory, all your investors, all your sponsors, like, yeah, we are actually going to be a factor in a few years, and we can prove it because right now we're the team that's moving up the ranks. So that's why I think it really matters. If we're talking like 2017, 2018, yeah, the fight for third, I'd still find it entertaining, but it wouldn't matter in terms of the grand scheme of things. I think it has like legit sort of, consequence for the long-term future of these teams. Maybe not Ferrari so much, because Ferrari's always going to be cashed up, but the other three for sure. And in terms of who it's going to be, I would agree with you, Will. I think Renault's low downforce concept sort of will help in Bahrain. But as we've just seen, like, crazy things can happen. And, you know, you can run 50 laps on a set of intermediates and find your car on the podium. And now you've got this, you know, not massive, but you've got a significant gap when you used to be 2 points behind. You've got a 5-point lead, which might be all it's decided by in the end. So the swings are crazy. I'm expecting more swings because it's very likely that in these next final three races that someone, you know, crashes out at an inopportune time or, you know, takes advantage of another crash or whatever. And that'll, you know, make it fascinating. I think the real interesting thing as well, sort of a side thing, is sort of where McLaren's going to end up in this, because they were clearly the strongest to start the season, but I would argue they're now, and I think I'd have to go back and look at my quotes, but I believe Andreas Seidel said this in his post-race press conference, that like he believes they are the third fastest of those three teams, which is concerning for them to take, to see, you know, not a big step backwards, but a step backwards. And if that continues to play out, like, that'll be a very disappointing end to what looked like a very promising season for them.
I think that the conditions kind of came to them in Turkey, but, you know, in kind of back in normal circumstances, as we expect in Bahrain and then in Abu Dhabi, I think that they could be in trouble against Renault. But just to finish off, Paul, obviously we never want to see a championship decided with three races to go, but that is the case now. What are you looking for in these last three races? Are you wanting to see Bottas kind of stage a Nico Rosberg 2015 style come back, win the last few races of the season, then take that momentum into the new year? How do you think that people can use these last three races to kind of get back one on Hamilton or kind of start something towards next season?
Let's talk about the Bottas thing in closing. Yeah, he can get reloaded. I mean, how often is the guy going to reload? Honestly, he's a fantastic driver. He's a brilliant driver. He's not a great driver, like his teammate. His teammate is beating him. There is no ways Bottas is going to take Lewis on and beat him. So he can win the next three races. I don't care. When it matters, Lewis will come out firing and beat him. And I think we have to resign ourselves to the fact that Mercedes are content with this equilibrium. Bottas is the best number two in the world, although where was he on when really Lewis needed him? In fact, I was quite stunned at how hard Bottas made it for Lewis to get by when Lewis was lapping him. Because
Very good point.
I actually thought he got in his way. Maybe I'm the only guy. Maybe I'm a Lewis fan, but I just thought, hey.
No, I'm there too, Paul.
Okay, you saw that. I mean, I just thought, dude, what are you doing? And even, you know what was beautiful? Lewis drove around him with one hand waving, like gesticulating and saying, what the hell are you doing, dude? You know what I mean? So much for Bottas and that. I just felt that wasn't a cool moment. And look, he'll have an excuse, spray, he didn't see, fine, whatever the case. Bottom line, the team should have radioed and said, hey, Lewis is lapping you, mate. Get out the way, or whatever Alonso said. You know, Lewis is faster than you. But, you know, he was lapping the guy. That day is a proper photograph of where they stand. They're not on the same level. At the moment, I don't know if there is a driver. I used to say Max, but, yeah, I don't know. You know, really, is there a driver at Lewis's level? So, yes, Bottas can come back. He can win and win and win, and he'll probably win the first two races next year. But when Lewis puts the hammer down, Bottas is no match for him.
I'm with you. Like, he's a very good driver. He's just not elite. He's not a living legend, which is what we have to call Lewis at this point. He's got the most world titles in F1 history. So, you know, maybe if he's going up against, maybe if he's going up against Sergio Perez, you know, it might be a similar story in his favor. I don't know. I think if I had to rate him in terms of, like, you know, I'd say Max is definitely two, Ricciardo's three, Leclerc's probably four. After that, it's a bit of a toss-up.
I'd put Seb in there. I'd put Seb gravitating between two and four.
You can make a case for Seb, although it is a tough case to make based on, you know, recent form.
Like I say, he gravitates. Let's make it he gravitates from two to eight.
But this is the thing about Bottas as well, is that he's just not as strong a driver, and that's not a really knock against him. It's just you'd say that for almost anyone. I'm sure of it if they had Lewis as their teammate. So it's kind of rough, and to be fair, maybe at the time we didn't give Nico Rosberg the credit he was due. You know, obviously he did win a championship, but I think people didn't appreciate how good he was. And so that's the other thing, you're comparing Bottas to, and he's not quite matching up there. And, you know, if Lewis was a 10, Nico was probably a 9, and Bottas is probably an 8.5, you know, something like that. And yeah, so that's the other thing you've got to consider as well. But he's definitely, you know, he's not a scrub. And I hope we get to see him in F1. You know, this George Russell thing is definitely going to become more of a story going forward, because people, you know, especially with no one outside Mercedes challenging Lewis, they want people inside. So, you know, there's no guarantees George Russell will do it, but everyone hopes that he will, so that the chorus will sort of get louder for him to take Bottas's seat. But yeah, Bottas should go down as a very high quality F1 driver, and you know, I hope to see him in the sport for years to come.
Just to add to what you're saying about Nico Rosberg, I think actually one of Nico Rosberg's biggest strengths was actually recognizing his own inferiority compared to Lewis. I don't think Bottas has ever been willing to accept that he's just not as good as Hamilton. I think he still thinks that he can beat him just on pace, and I don't, until Lewis is about 45, I don't think that's going to be the case. And what Nico did was, he instead, he went to just try and beat Lewis at all the margins, you know, in terms of preparation. You know, I've heard him talk about his gloves and all this equipment that he developed just to give him those like small marginal gains. He talked about, you know, he was willing to crash with Lewis, as we saw at Spain, if he thought that could, you know, slow Hamilton's momentum or stop him getting a good result on him. Every time Hamilton had a problem, whether it be mechanical or a bad start, he took advantage of that. And I just don't think Bottas has that same... He's not... I mean, Rosberg, to be fair to him, is one of the smartest drivers I think we've had in F1 in terms of the way he thinks through, not just on a technical side, but on a kind of psychological side. And I just think that what he was willing to do is, after 2015, he had acknowledged that he wasn't going to beat Hamilton on pace. You know, Hamilton got pole 12 out of the first 13 races in 2015. And instead, he just went about being better than Hamilton at everything else. And until Bottas accepts that he's not as quick as Hamilton, he's probably not going to beat him.
I do recall I wrote an inside line about Bottas. When Bottas joined Mercedes, there was a call saying, listen, you better listen to Rosberg because he'll tell you how to beat Lewis. And Bottas said, no, it's okay, I've got my own counsel, I don't need him. And I'm telling you, at the beginning of the season, I think I wrote an inside line and I said, Bottas needs Rosberg. Imagine if Bottas went to Mercedes and said, listen, my mental coach is Nico, okay? Nico's going to be giving me my gloves. You know that blonde lady that gives Lewis his gloves? Nico becomes that for Bottas. Imagine
becomes
that.
Becomes his physio, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he becomes his physio and mental coach. And he gets a ticket to stand and hand the bottle to Nico. So basically, to Valtteri. If Valtteri wants to win the championship next year, he goes, he gets Nico Rosberg and says, you in my corner. You in the Mercedes car. You are my manager. You are my coach. You are my girlfriend, you're everything. And that's it. And he learns that's the only guy who can beat Lewis at Mercedes was Rosberg. So who do you go and get the blueprint from? You don't go get it from yourself or your girlfriend who's an athlete or a cyclist or whatever. You go to Nico and you say, hey, mate, I want to move into your apartment this year. I want to beat Lewis. You're going to help me and you're going to be in my corner. And that's the only way they're going to do it. Other than that, he doesn't have a chance in terms of pace, mental strength, all that kind of stuff. Nico Rosberg, put it this way, Bottas, get Nico Rosberg on the line and get him to your house.
But anyway, I think that's a good place to finish up. It was a fascinating Grand Prix, and I enjoyed this discussion of all the weird and wonderful things that have kind of spilled out of it. We will be back to preview the first Bahrain Grand Prix on the traditional circuit, and also to discuss any of the kind of news that's coming out of the driver market, as we expect there to be a few announcements perhaps in the next week or so. Thanks very much, guys, for joining me, and if you want to get in touch with the show, please do drop us an email on podcast@grandprix247.com, and please visit our website, grandprix247.com. Thanks for listening. I'll speak to you soon. Bye bye.